Washington center fielder. A Washington center fielder, Washington Senators. You know, the beautiful thing about games, particularly baseball, you know, it's very, let's see, is it hip or is it unhip? To dig baseball. I don't know. I just dig it. I'll tell you one of the reasons why I dig it, though. By the way, I'm going to issue a monthly bulletin for those of you who want to subscribe to my monthly bulletin. You probably felt a little out of it from time to time in the last 2 or 3 years because it's very difficult to keep up with what is, well, what you should properly be angry at. I mean, you know, one of the most difficult things for the angry comedians is to keep up with their anger. When they find themselves being angry at last month's thing, I mean, you know. So if you've had a little trouble lately keeping up with the right things to be angry with, just send your name and address to On the Spot, WOR, AM, and FM, New York, On the Spot, and we will send it to you plain sealed wrapper, and you must be over 21, because the kids under 21 know what to be angry at. Okay? All right? So here, again, this thing of the game. Excuse me, madam, for digressing. Has it ever occurred to you that your life is one gigantic digression? How come you never got to where you wanted to go, that golden sunset there? Don't call up here and tell me Shepard's digressing again, baby. You should talk. What are you doing sitting out on your duff listening to the radio? Well, you could be watching Kim Stanley cry. Or you could be crying yourself. Even better. Get off my back. Okay? All right? Get off my back. Look, when you get down here in the morning, my job to shape you up. When I shape you up, you are shaped up. Get off my back. Okay? Right, that's much better. Much better. I'm watching the ball game today. Just innocently sitting there, sucking away on an all-day sucker. I've learned how to make them last all day now. It's taken me all this time. I could tell you about the time I went down to Mr. Mattingly's grocery store where we were on the book. Boy, oh boy, I'm telling you, being on the book was like having an upside-down inverted pyramid right on the top of your head. A pyramid that made the Great Pyramid at Gizeh seem like a tinker toy model. They'd get you on the book, and the next thing you know, you've got a grocery bill that rivals the national debt and grows and expands, and there's a whole involved economy, almost like the national economy with armor. My mother used to go down to decide how much meat money we were going to spend for the week. It was like laying out the dough for the armament. How much for defense this week? That was when you'd buy the bread. Now what are we going to lay out for education? Old Carla Kaminsky, got any chaw? My father'd say, yep. He'd reach down into the smoking cabinet where he kept his Lucky Strikes and give Carl that old package of 8-Hour Day. 8-Hour Day is the name of a chewing tobacco. And in case those of you have never heard of chewing tobacco, it's like if you took a handful of cigarettes, took the paper off, ground it up in your hand, put a little goo in it, and maybe just a little touch of tar, maybe a little kerosene, mixed it all up, rolled it up in a ball, and stuck it back there in the motors and just started to chew. Oh, boy, that would scare him one day, wouldn't it? At the office? I mean, really, it would be wonderful to see one of these very, very nice-looking official types like Henry Cabot Lodge. Or wouldn't it be great if it got out that Nixon chewed mail pouch? He was a secret char? You know, he might get my vote if that happened. First chink in the armor. But it would be great, you know, if I could see a TV show, you know, one of these panel shows. You know, I, in case you don't know anything about chewing, one of the worst problems with chewing is the moment of truth, which always arises in chewing. And I'll tell you, I'll tell you something about my experience with chewing one time. I mean, you notice my left ear, how it hangs there like kind of loose? That was the time when I was 16 years old and I got a package of mail pouch and I stuck half of it in the back in the left there. I'd never done this in my life before. And I was working at the steel mill, and I stuck it back there in the back like I had seen all these guys down at the smelting shop. And it hangs down like a deflated basketball. Kind of hangs down. You stick it back there, and funny thing, you know, I stuck it all the way in the back there, and I'm sitting there in the bus, and we're going along, and I began to hear this high humming note. I thought we were having trouble with transmission in the bus. And it began to get higher and higher, and then it got to be a kind of a high, thin buzz. And I felt like any minute now there was some kind of an overload relay that was going to pop, and I didn't know where it was. And suddenly it popped all over the floor. Oh, fantastic. Oh, fantastic. Oh. Oh, I sweat. Oh, have you ever been so sick to your stomach that you just pop out and it's so much sweat? I mean, sweat just pours off you like gigantic, great drops drip down on your nose. Oh, I'm getting sick thinking of it now. Hold on a minute. Oh, there. Whew. Oh, boy. Oh, it would be a great television show, though. Just an immense TV show. Here we got Lawrence Spivak, you see. Lawrence Spivak is looking angry, and he's always saying, "Sir, I'd like to ask you about the proposal you made regarding the Peruvian." There's Lawrence Spivak. And over here is Martha Roundtree, and here's a kind of a fat lady wearing a flowered hat who writes for one of the Atlanta newspaper chains. She's sitting there. And right in the middle of it all is sitting Henry Cabot Lodge. And the program is called Meet the Important People. And it comes on, see? great picture. I can see it. On comes the theme, see? You hear, first of all, it says a CBS public service production. And you see the White House slowly drifting past. And then there's a stylized drawing of the Capitol Dome. A prize-winning program. Peabody Award winner. Of course, it's on 3 o'clock Sunday a.m. That's the time all prize-winning shows are. And then there's always the MC of these shows, who is kind of a well-scrubbed-looking type, who reminds you roughly of a, let's say, of a sensible Bergen Evans. It's hard to imagine, but you know the type. And he looks out at you and he says, good afternoon. Welcome to Meet the Important People. Now, today we are going to discuss on our roundtable discussion the importance of being important in today's important world conflictual problems. And our guest this afternoon is Henry Cabot Lodge, an important person. And the camera dollies over. And you see Cabot Lodge. He goes, looks at you. He doesn't say anything. He just sort of grins with his mouth shut. And one of our panel members today is Martha Roundtree. Hi, y'all. She looks out at you. That slightly bug-eyed look. And then they dolly over. And there is Mrs. Amelia Watanabe, who is the ace reporter for the Atlanta Journal chain of newspapers. She looks out at you, you know, that funny little look. They're all a little nervous in the beginning, you know. And there, of course, is our regular member, our regular panel member, Lawrence Spivak. He looks out at you with that angry smile. He's a literate Mort Saul. He looks out at you with an angry smile. And then he says, all right, now, let's begin the questioning now. All right, folks, now, let's begin with you, Lawrence. And Lawrence says, Mr. Lodge, since you have left the United Nations, there have been many changes in the world situation. And we would like to ask, first of all, what are you covering up for? Lodge starts, well, well, that's a good question. Mr. Spivak, I feel that my record stands for itself. Yes, right, that's an excellent question. All right, and now what about you, Miss Roundtree?
Well, Mr. Lodge, I've been wondering what it is about you that makes the voters of the Midwest, they kind of like you.
This time he answers with his mouth shut. He nods a little bit. And it goes on for 10 minutes like that. But each time as we pick up Mr. Lodge, there are beads of sweat beginning to form on his forehead. And suddenly, just as Lawrence Spivak says, and now Mr. Lodge, you haven't said much during this program. I'd like to put a point-blank yes or no question to you. No, 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 no. Just a minute now.
I'm going to keep you right to the point. I'm going to ask you, and suddenly the camera picks up Henry Cabot Lodge. He leaps up out of his chair. He rushes off screen, and 30 seconds later he comes back and he looks very smiling. Sits down, perspiration. Now he speaks fluently. Just goes right along and answers all the questions, and answers them well. He got caught in the moment of truth. All there was to it, just a moment of truth. And so I saw this moment of truth today, in case you're interested in the moment of truth. Sorry, not, I shouldn't have brought it up at this time.
What's this young man speaking about?
Well, I've often wondered what were any of us speaking about. You see, one thing I've learned. I have learned that we are living in the midst of the most completely wild, the most beautifully, inconceivably conceived vaudeville show. Moment of truth. Here is the center fielder out there. A beautiful moment. And I think it was Roger Maris or somebody. He had a little fly ball. Just one of these little nubbers. It just sails up and it was a soft, mushy click. It wasn't a hard one, just like that. And he caught it right on the fat part of the bat, but he caught it in a twisting going away. And so he just pushed it up and just was rising as it went out of her second base. Just a soft, easy, what they call it, just a soft, easy humpback liner. Just raising up there. And the center fielder was playing him short of all things. Out of position already. And so, the camera's on him. He starts to run. And the ball is, obviously, it's an easy out. And suddenly there's a little scurrying out there, a little shuffling around. And the next thing I knew, the center fielder is reclining. The ball is bouncing. He grabs it. And Maris pulls up with a base hit. It wasn't an error. It was a base hit. And so the announcer, I think it was Red Barber at this point, he says, you know what he did there? He started after the ball, and just when he was about to grab the ball, he flipped his sunglasses down. He says, you know, there's an old baseball axiom that either you put your sunglasses down before you run after the ball, or you don't put them down at all. He got caught in midstream with his sunglasses down. Oh, my, coin a phrase, man. It's difficult to explain what that phrase means to you, madam, in your present overwrought condition. But I'm sitting there, and I said, that's just like all of us. We start out at a heavy gallop, and just about the time we get going, roughly, we begin to feel that we're losing change from our hip pocket. It's beginning to jiggle up and out. We start reaching down into our hip pocket, hoping that we can do something about it. Our sunglasses are jiggling up and down. The ball is spinning down. The TV commercials. There's this one where all these serious-looking people are standing around, and you suspect they're inventing a new nuclear fission weapon. You see all kinds of titrations going on up and down, and the next thing I know, Barbara Britton is stepping up to the front there, wearing a white coat. I can't imagine what they're concocting with Barbara Britton at the head of the experiments.
Hello, ladies. This is Barbara Britton speaking to you from our important laboratory.
And you can... they're concocting another end. So, would you believe that there is a company that has spent countless dollars and countless hours in the laboratory to produce an odorless fertilizer? And then, once they have produced the odorless fertilizer, and it goes out, you know what fertilizer is, baby. It goes out on the market, it gets out there, and it's going pretty good, you know? And then somebody realizes that it should be selling better. So they spend another $4 million, another 8,000 hours in the laboratory, and they institute a synthetic barnyard odor in the fertilizer. And sales have gone up 200%.
Well, Jim?
I have a feeling that a historian, maybe 500 or 600 years from now, would be very, very intrigued by looking at a digest of the average television show or the average radio show that was heard by the average person in the United States during this most crucial period in our history. I think the composite television show would be a guy walking down a western street meeting Bert Parks at the other end about to award a prize to somebody in the bar. I mean, this would be a composite, you know, a digest. That would be the average. And let's face it, I'm talking about the average. The average radio show, I can't even... I mean, if you went right across the dial, I can't even... This great cacophony of teenage songs with a guy shrieking the time every 30 seconds. Somebody giving you the weather every 2.5 minutes. And a 5-minute capsule of headlines. Yeah. This would be the average show heard today. Now, these are the communications that we speak of as bringing people closer together. Whereas actually, they've isolated people, I feel, more than they've brought them together. And this is, again, I have to bring in the disclaimer. This is not an editorial against radio or television, not at all. I'm just saying it's I think, a basic thing within us. All of these things spring out of us, you know, everybody. We like to, you know, there's an old idea, the old philosophy of the we and they, which has been exploited by many people over the past 15,000 years or more. It's exploited by nightclub comics as well as by dictators. It's exploited by people who write books as well as people who publish magazines. The we-they theory holds something like this, that it is granted that there are things wrong with the world, terrible things wrong with the world, but we are the alert, bright people who feel that something should be done about it. They are the people who are doing it to us. Now, the they might be another country. If, generally speaking, in other countries, they point the they out as being us now. We are...